algorithms are controlling what you see on socials.
The worst things get amplified. It's just a constant barrage of content.
Billionaires profit by keeping your eyes on the screen.
They know about the harms. They know about the choices.
Misinformation is more interesting than truth.
Algorithms are driving you to extreme content amid a cyber sex crime wave.
Last year, I sent a dick pic, and I got blackmailed over it.
Is there no limit to what the platforms will promote?
They were finding profiles on Instagram that within two clicks took you to child sexual abuse.
Over 1 in 10 British young people have seen child sexual abuse material.
The thirst to consume this type of content is only ever increasing.
It's starting a lot younger with people.
This offender is in his early 20s and he's a re-offender.
The UK is driving an epidemic of live-streamed abuse abroad.
1 in 100 Filipino children were trafficked, abused, and exploited.
He make an online profile of me, and someone is watching me on the screen.
Cybersex crime is the online policing war.
It's crazy that somebody from back in the UK has been paying to live stream this stuff.
And at a time when tech giants are brazenly rolling back on responsibility.
The fact checkers have just been too politically biased and have destroyed more trust than they've created.
Social media bosses are leaving it to the powerful to defiantly set the rules online.
And as of today, TikTok is back.
Are the worst crimes on socials out of control? And who's protecting you?
Hunting the Online Sex Predators, presented by James Blake.
42% of Brits were hit by scammers last year, with financial sextortion being one of the rapidly rising threats. In Belfast, Posty Nathan was targeted, with sextorters asking for money. I saw his TikTok about it, where he racked up more than 500,000 views.
Last year, I sent a dick pic, and I got blackmailed over it. Basically, I was Snapchatting this here girl for a week or two, and then one night, she got a little bit frisky and started like sending me stuff, and then she asked stuff of me, and I sent her a dick pic. Turns out it was a fake account, and next thing you know, boom, got all these screenshots sent to me of the picture I just sent her, screenshots of my face, and screenshots of all my followers on Instagram, and she told me that she's going to ruin my life to send these to all my followers if I don't send her $3,000.
Nathan's flipping the script on the scammers by speaking out.
And next thing you know, I got added into a group chat on Instagram.
Okay.
With her Instagram handle, kind of thing.
With your followers?
Yeah.
What was going through your head at that point in time?
I definitely remember my heart being like, definitely remember like sinking. I was like, fuck, what have I done? Like if you've seen a movie before, like an atomic bomb or something goes off, there's like a moment of silence and it seems like slow. And then next thing you know, when the bomb goes off, it's just like, fast.
Yeah.
That's how it kind of went. It felt like everything was in slow motion.
What did you decide to do next?
Immediately just went in and started reporting the images and blocked and reported the account on her Instagram account and her Snapchat account. Blocked it all. I was like, I need to cut off connection to this here.
Do you think that what happened to you is the kind of thing the police could help you with?
Like if it was local, I feel like they definitely could have. But I definitely feel like it's better for you to contact them just in case, because the same thing happened to a boy not far from where I live. He took his own life.
Reports of sextortion involving 14 and 15-year-olds rose by 25% last year. To tackle this, police are engaging with this age group to start conversations about online dangers.
Cheshire.
I do remember being at school like it was yesterday.
James goes into a secondary school.
Hello.
Good morning, James.
How are you?
Nice to meet you. Hey, Rimmer.
James, nice to meet you.
Most victims trust who they're sending nudes to, usually thinking it's someone like them. I'm finding out what a problem image sharing is.
It's only the tip of the iceberg that we're really seeing. I can imagine that what's being reported to us is a tiny fraction. What we're looking at is sharing of indecent images of young people. The Cheshire Constabulary filmed different scenarios of how young people can get into those situations and then filming endings to that to show them how it could have gone if they'd have said no.
Teenagers.
Do you think there is pressure to send photos?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, you feel pressured into doing it?
Definitely.
But I'm learning it's not just pressure to share nudes. Nearly 90% of young people have witnessed or received harmful content too.
In terms of the social media content that you guys are actually watching, do you ever see anything that you haven't expected to see, or do you always kind of see the stuff that you want?
Like some days, let's say you're watching TikTok, the algorithm could be like really good, so you're just like watching and watching and watching. Instagram reels can vary. Like it can be like a nice video of something like good happening, and then you can just see someone like getting like ran over or something like.
Really?
Yeah.
And whenever you do see it, what do you do? Like, do you just scroll past, or do you report it, or do you do anything like that?
You can report it, but the video will definitely not be taken off, and it won't like be actually taken serious enough.
I think it's quite amazing how conscious the students were about algorithms and what it's showing them, and I think I'd really like to delve into that more.
Last year, top social media bosses faced the US Senate over platform safety. And whistleblowers like Meta's Arturo Bejar candidly spoke out against Facebook and Instagram's practices.
They are deciding time and time again to not tackle these issues.
I'm messaging this Arturo guy. He was staff at Meta in the early days of algorithms.
I guess the algorithms are supposed to be neutral, but I mean, can any of us prove that?
Turns out, people are digging into how algorithms can warp your thinking. Caitlin Reger is an associate professor at University College London. She researches how social media shapes you.
I look at the impact of algorithms, and I'm interested in the way that hate, harm, and misinformation spread online. The algorithmic study that I did recently looked at how harm is prioritized on TikTok. Now, I could have taken many different types of harm. I could have looked at self-harm. I could have looked at body dysmorphia. I specifically looked at the way that young men were being pushed online misogyny.
Can you tell me more about the nuts and bolts of the actual studies and what you did?
We did interviews with young people, and we used those interviews to create archetypes. So archetypes that were based on real individuals. And the idea was that they watched videos that would have been interesting to that archetype. And we found that over just 1 week of opening a new account, that the misogynistic content that was being fed to our hypothetical young men increased by fourfold.
Is there an argument to be had that that individual has created this for themselves?
What the algorithm is trying to do is to push you more and more extreme in a very slow and incremental way that's almost indistinguishable for you. They do that because that helps keep your attention, because extreme content is just more interesting.
That's the only reason. It's literally just that gets more engagement, more views, more likes, and that's obviously what the platforms want.
Yeah, I mean, misinformation is more interesting than truth.
Liz Byrne.
I run a marketing company creating content to boost engagement. More views, more followers, and more followers? Well, that means more cars.
Do you know how much time I've spent today on Instagram? 56 minutes. Today I've had 130 pickups off my phone. It's a lot. If I was picking up weights that much, that'd be huge.
On his phone.
Is it algorithms that are changing the way you react to extreme content?
Now we're set up, what I'm going to do is open up the Reels Explorer page, and I'm going to consume the content. I'm not going to engage on it, but I'm simply going to passively look at it and scroll on and just do this repetitively to see, does that influence the algorithm? Yeah, so there's instantly something to do with like appearance. This guy is showing how you can improve your jaw. The very next video is because money never broke my heart and somebody's scoring out love. I've been on this for like, what, a minute? Probably a minute and a half, and now I'm at a video where a guy's like counting thousands of pounds of cash, going to the gym, hollowing out your cheeks, and things about not being able to, not losing, you can't lose.
Day two, a warehouse covered in street art.
This is super cool, isn't it?
He looks up at some art.
It's been 24 hours since I started my algorithm test.
James is sitting at a bench on his phone, watching videos on social media.
On day two, the content is mainly positive. It's like cool cars, fitness, being healthy, looking after yourself, working hard. Like, a lot of this stuff is stuff that definitely resonates with me, and I feel like this stuff isn't toxic at all. I mean, I would say this is actually a very positive influence.
One more round, one more set, one more lap, one more minute.
Day three.
Having hooked me in over the last 2 days with positive content, the reel started to get a bit weirder.
9 months to make a single baby? The men for babies will take 2 weeks.
Don't listen to fat people, because fat people are usually wrong about most things, because what they do is they change their worldview around that it's great to be fat.
I'm actually quite shocked by day three that it has already brought me to such polarizing content. And I think that if you were to take that as face value and these are the people you're looking up to, you might develop, I suppose, a bit of a wrong mindset, because it is very extreme. And as I say, it's polarizing, but I think that's on purpose to get the clicks and the comments and stuff.
Can we skip to the good part?
The algorithm test shows that harmful content is pushed to you, hooking you in. Why isn't the law protecting us? The UK's Online Safety Act aims to hold platforms accountable for harmful content. But does it address algorithms? I'm off to meet Baroness Beban Kidron. Her USP is safety on socials. So could you tell me about the Online Safety Act and what that is?
It was an idea to do groundbreaking legislation that actually did protect citizens. It does take a swipe at some of the algorithmic recommendations of things like pro-suicide, pro-Emma, self-harm. We've just got to understand that actually the algorithm is not neutral. And I think that the tech sector has played a blinder in pretending they're not a product, pretending that they're just in the ether.
It's kind of became such a huge part of life that people do forget it's a business, that is all part of a platform that you're getting for free in return for your data. Mm. Can you tell me more about what you do now?
Over a year ago, a specialist police unit got in touch with me to ask for my help. But in this particular case, they were finding routes that were clearly from profiles on Instagram that within 2 clicks took you to child sexual abuse. 2 clicks. I asked the police to flag it as if they were a member of public. Nothing happened. I then asked them to use their official role as police, and they came down. And then we checked again, and if you look for the same sites, they show up with the words in a different order. So they're all back up again. Mm. We wrote to Meta, and we didn't hear anything. I asked the lawyers to rewrite to Meta and the police to contact Meta, and Meta said, we do not monitor the email abuse@meta.com.
No way. That's insane.
No business has the right to make a profit if they can't deal with child sexual abuse on their platform. Forget it. That is not a price that children should pay for someone else's profit.
I went in there just to talk about algorithms, and I thought that that's kind of what we would be going through. And I've left there now knowing so much more about the really deep, dark side of this, which is the child sex abuse stuff. And I just feel like it completely shocked me to my core, to be honest. I had no idea that this was being facilitated on standard, everyday social media platforms.
Arturo sends a response.
Arturo wants to meet in New York to talk for his time keeping harmful content off Meta.
I've arrived in New York City.
I'm still doing an experiment to see for myself whether Instagram's algorithm is serving up harmful content.
Men playing basketball in a court. Day 4.
So we're less than 5 days into the experiment, and basically the content is starting to get violent. There's quite a lot of violence actually in the content. There's a lot of stuff, I guess, that could be seen as like misogynistic, and a lot of content that is just generally quite offensive.
I want to find out what the platforms know and what they're doing about this stuff. Arturo Bejar worked at Meta. He ran the Protect and Cure team and he researched harmful content. After he left Meta, he gave evidence to a Senate hearing into harm on the platform.
We found that 1 in 8 kids aged 13 to 15 years old experienced unwanted sexual advances in the last 7 days.
I want to hear his take on how Meta algorithms work.
So Arturo, what was it like in the early days of Meta when you were working there?
It was really good. There was a lot of belief in, look, we're connecting the world. And then my job was, how do you make that safe for people? And so they hired me to be in charge of the compassion team, helping people when they're thinking about committing suicide. It's a charge of helping teens, but we're dealing with bullying. And so I wrote directly to Mark Zuckerberg, Adam Mosseri, Sheryl Sandberg, saying, this is a harm, here's what you can do. In the hope that the next day the phone would ring and would be like, okay, let's reduce it, because there's so many things that they could do that would not impact their bottom line.
Yeah.
Rather than doing that, they buried the report. My contract ran out. It was time for me to leave. And they didn't do anything. Now they've kind of created this company that's much better at protecting the brand of the company than it is at protecting teenagers.
How does the algorithm change what young people may see on social media?
The worst things get amplified. And the reason that is because if you look at something in Reels and you find it disgusting, that is taken as a signal that the video is interesting to somebody and it's gonna get amplified. Earlier this year, I decided to do some basic testing.
One experiment found that the algorithm was stitching clips of kids to more suggestive content.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Another algorithm creates montages of little kids and attracts inappropriate comments.
Oh my God.
Back to back to back videos of 7, 8, 9-year-olds in PJs doing little dances. And you know they do this because the algorithm rewards them doing it, right? Like if you create a video like that, you get thousands of views. And then if you look at the comments and say, I give it a 10, so hot, little fire things. Most of those were commenting on how hot the 8-year-old girl wearing almost nothing is, right? A little
eggplant
emoji.
Seen that, yeah.
Right? It's the shameful and calculated decision on part of the recommendation algorithm to promote videos that sexualize minors. That's the problem here, right? If you're a girl and you create something like that, the algorithm will disgracefully promote it. And it's a choice by Meta, right? They have the technology and the capacity to make it so that these videos just don't get any distribution, because the reason those videos get 23,000 likes is because the algorithm is promoting them. They're amplifying this content that sexualizes young girls.
The kids aren't doing anything wrong. Arturo is arguing it's how the videos are pulled together and pushed by the algorithm to offenders that's the problem.
Why do you think that they're just so unresponsive about this in terms of fixing it? Is it because they're just so big now, they just couldn't possibly sort this mess out?
They could 100% sort this mess out in less than a year.
Really?
If that's what they wanted to do. The problem is that they don't want to acknowledge, understand, or address any harm that people are experiencing.
For so long, I've actually wanted to speak to somebody at Meta, even whenever I had all of my issues with the fake profiles and all of that kind of stuff. And I was really taken back by his experiment. Watching the videos made me feel a little bit sick, if I'm honest. I've got 2 nieces, and you know, I can remember when they were doing TikTok videos and little dances and things like that, and you kind of don't really think of it in that way. And to see it like that, presented like that, to see the comments and to hear what Arturo had to say about it was just kind of sick, to be honest.
Arturo joined a government inquiry into tech giants, but it often takes lawsuits to make change. In Manhattan, I'm meeting 2 lawyers who claim the design of big tech's algorithms create harm. They're part of a groundbreaking class action called the Social Media Addiction Litigation. That could do to the platforms what past cases did to Big Tobacco when they were forced to admit that smoking damaged your health.
So guys, what I really want to know is, you're obviously lawyers in Manhattan. Is it anything like Suits?
No, everybody at our firm has a law degree.
Ah, okay, so there's no Mike Ross then?
No.
Fair enough. I just
wanted to ask. We've got some fantastic paralegals though.
So are you guys leading the way in terms of these kind of legal cases?
I would say that our firm has always led the way when it comes to child sex abuse material litigation. But a lot of the harms we've talked about from social media are so much bigger than that. And there is massive litigation going on by firms across the US now. We believe, and we filed in this case, that Meta and a lot of other social media companies have decided to put kids second to profit. And when you have someone who's looking for sexually abusive material of a child, the algorithm is literally enabling that.
They know about the harms. They know about the choices. They know about, you know, the impact that the platforms are having. They know the impact that their choices in designing the product are having on the end user, and in this case, it's children.
Can you guys tell me about a case that you're working on at the moment?
So I'll first talk about a young girl who, unfortunately, in the use of social media, encounters a pedophile and a predator, and has, unfortunately, a lot of her materials been distributed for the better part of the last decade. And she has lived in a world where she's been unable to get herself out of the exploitation situation. And we are having to raise these children to do the right thing in a world where they don't know anybody.
Yeah, and they're vulnerable. These are vulnerable people.
Of course vulnerable. And not only vulnerable, but so harmed and exploited that they're not making rational decisions. And no matter how many times, even after contacting law enforcement and contacting us, and we do represent her, has ended up in scenarios where more imagery of her has been created, and we had to ask her desperately, please put a Taylor Swift song or a Beyonce song in the background of your next video, because then it won't go viral and it'll get taken down for copyright. We're willing to take down a copyright infringement for music much quicker than we're willing to take down a sexually invasive image of a child. What we're seeing now is a product that needs to be built safer.
Yeah.
And it's not going to happen until you push the bottom line to make these companies want to change.
Yeah.
So we unfortunately are left with no choice but to sue them, and to sue them in the US.
It's crazy that pop songs seem to get better protection online than kids do. Socials are where this starts. 48% of people searching for child abuse admit to using platforms to contact kids. Lawsuits in the States are pushing for change, but what's happening in the UK? Police forces have specialist units hunting cyber sex criminals. They make 800 arrests a month. In Cheshire, cops have been tipped off about a suspect. He's already got a record, having targeted a teenage boy for images. This time, he's uploaded a child abuse video to a platform.
We've got 21-year-old male subject. It's a upload from a chat site.
Are they images and videos that we already know? Do we know about?
Yes, yeah. They're known on CADE. So It's an email we're aware of. It was previously registered.
Do we know if he's previously hidden devices or tried to dispose of them when the police have arrived?
We think he's going to be aware. So I would say we need to go in early doors.
Okay.
Do the triage of the devices on the scene. So we get an early indication then. It'll help our interview.
You also mentioned this guy was quite young. What age is he?
21, and he only came off the sex offenders register in July this year.
We are finding that it's starting a lot younger with people, and it's not a shock for us to come in sometimes and it'd be like, oh, we're dealing with someone who's under 18.
Are they using social media, or like, what are they doing?
Everything you can think of: Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, Discord, anywhere that they can have access to children or people that want to talk about the abuse of children. It will thrive.
I still can't get over the fact that this offender is in his early 20s and he's a re-offender. This guy's already been caught doing this stuff, which is just equally as disgusting as it is shocking.
In a car.
Detectives Scott and Faye are heading out to arrest this guy.
We try and keep it as sort of low-key as possible. Obviously, we drive in plain cars and we're in plain clothes. There's a degree that you can't really avoid. You know, we can't go into addresses without body armour and our kit on, because if you don't really know exactly what you're going to go into, whether you're going to be met by hostility.
Scott and Faye get out of the car.
Good morning. Could you TA myself for arrest attempts? You're under arrest currently on suspicion of possession, making a distribution of indecent images of children, OK?
Footage from a police cam.
Oh, something's happening.
James is in the car.
Is that him? I think that's him. So they've just brought the guy out and they're walking him to the cop car now, putting him in.
Scott.
We tend to find that there's a lot of people we go into, they're aware that they're going to get caught at some point, but it's almost like a compulsion that they continue offending. We went in there, he knew exactly why we were there, and we handed him an information sheet stating why we were there.
In the police station.
We've received information relating to upload of one Cat A video, one Cat B image as well.
Do you think this kind of crime is linked to pornography?
Anecdotally, we'll speak to suspects, offenders, and a lot of them, they are genuinely just consuming huge amounts of pornography to the point where they become utterly desensitised, and that's when they push the boundaries. It's almost like drugs offences, you know, the more they consume, the more they want. They find that that's the only thing that can sort of satisfy their needs is extreme pornography or pornography involving children.
There's calls for more research after a 2023 preliminary report found that 65% of child abuse viewers started with habitual porn use.
Just a little bit of an update from the address when you're ready.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we've got the mobile phone that obviously you were handed to on arrest of him. There's a tower computer in the bedroom with a hard drive, and there's also an iPad, which was concealed under the bed. We can't see on a basic triage any indecent material. However, the offending email address is present.
The forensic team will examine the seized devices, but this is a global problem. Cheshire Police's tip-off came from a report generated in Washington, D.C. The National Centre for Missing and Exploited Children is on the front line of this fight. Suspect social media content is flagged here. It's then examined and sent to the relevant police forces. I want to know if they think the tech giants are doing enough.
How many reports are you actually getting?
Last year, we got 36.2 million reports just in that year alone. That averages out to about 80,000 to 100,000 reports coming in per day. Mm-hmm. That kind of volume just continues to increase year over year over year. So the US law requires that when US companies find exploitative material, meaning child sexual abuse material, on their platforms, they must report to us. But what they have to report is not so clear. So oftentimes we get really bare bones reports in. Sometimes we can't even determine, you know, a jurisdiction.
And there's no legal force to make them do that?
Right now, there's no requirements on the specific types of fields that they must report. There's just, you know, guidelines of what they may. It is reporting, but it's not effective in being able to actually go towards that end goal of safeguarding a child or being able to kind of get that bad actor.
Staff here sort through unchecked reports from social media, often cluttered with memes and jokes, to uncover urgent cases that need investigating. It's a small world. There's actually a British guy here from the National Crime Agency.
Andy, great to meet you. I didn't expect to actually meet somebody from the UK here, so it was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I'm still the only sort of non-US law enforcement here, so I do try and sell it to my international colleagues as much as possible, the benefit of actually being hands-on here.
So you're basically in charge of sending these reports back to the UK then?
Yeah, between 500 and 1,000 a day is what we get from the platforms. We generally remove about 63% of those. The thirst to consume this type of content is only ever increasing. It's one of the reasons I've built out a team of NetMec analysts who specifically only look at UK reports.
Andy, what do you think it would be like for the UK police if you weren't actually here?
It would grind to a halt in the UK. It would mean that everything that was reported from the platforms was sent over without any form of triage, without any sort of eyes on look here. That volume of reporting would just not be something that policing could keep up with. One officer working here is probably the equivalent of 30 officers working in the UK.
Wow.
If we can get that information on that report as it lands on my desk and on my colleagues' desks, that means we can be through the door, you know, in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
So a lot of this stuff you see, Andy, is on these mainstream platforms. Where is the biggest challenge in all of this?
Live streaming has been around for a long time and continues to be a difficult area to tackle. Live streaming naturally happens in these encrypted platforms.
The tech giants pass on the obvious suspect content that they spot on the platforms. But with end-to-end encrypted live streams, only the sender and receiver can see the content. This makes it difficult to detect, forcing undercover operatives to find other ways to catch criminals.
So we need to use investigative tools to try and think of a way in which we can actually pick up data points to know who the people are who are paying for these services, mainly in Southeast Asia. We place NCA officers like myself in country. And the reason being, as I mentioned before, you know, you get no better response than when you're actually boots on the ground.
The NCA stations around 150 officers in 40 countries to tackle the UK's toughest crimes.
I really want to find out a bit more about the live streaming and what that actually is and what's going on there.
James is on a plane to the Philippines.
The Philippines is a group of more than 7,000 islands in Southeast Asia. It's home to around 118 million people, one of the fastest growing economies in the world, outstripping the UK. It's a top tourist destination because of its class beaches and scenery.
I'm about to get on a jeepney, which is one of these, and it's like the form of transport here. There's like an Apple logo and all here.
As social media has spread across the country, the Philippines has become a hotspot for live-streamed child abuse. And I want to know why.
Streets in the Philippines.
I found out there's a British officer out here from the National Crime Agency in the UK. He works as part of a global task force, and due to operational sensitivities, he can't be on camera.
So, Dominic, can you tell me more about why you're here in the Philippines?
National Crime Agency share intelligence both from the UK to the local teams and receive information and intelligence from the local teams and get it back to the UK. The online sexual abuse and exploitation of children is huge here in the Philippines. About one in every 100 Filipino children are being forced to produce new child sexual abuse and exploitation material.
That's insane.
It's crazy. And unfortunately, the UK is one of the largest demand countries. So you have individuals in the UK who will find a facilitator here who is willing to abuse their child.
Is there any significant cases you can tell me about that link back to the UK?
So one significant case that we're working on is a case involving a male in the UK called Duncan Bartlett. Bartlett was identified as paying an organised facilitation network here for the live streaming sexual abuse of children. I have shared that with our Filipino colleagues, and we've managed to identify additional previously unknown facilitators here in the Philippines. So as soon as the PNP have got all of the required intelligence, then we'll look to go and rescue the children and hopefully bring the perpetrator to justice.
Great.
James is wandering through a busy market and looking around at the stalls.
I want to look up this Bartlett guy who's under investigation. A quick search shows he used to work for the BBC and other media. He fronted a podcast for a university. It's shocking, but according to research from the University of Edinburgh, he's one of 450,000 British men committing this offence.
James is in an office.
On the ground in Manila, lawyers like Preah's work to help prosecute perpetrators and support victims.
Oh, hi, Preah's.
Hey, James.
How are you?
Welcome to our office.
Thank you
for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Let me show you the way.
And I want to know why the Philippines is a hotspot for this live streaming and why it's so hard to close down this appalling and widespread crime.
The crime is very complex, right? If you will think about what it really is. First, it's vastly underreported. And second, it is undetected. That's why it's very important for global governments and tech companies to allow for greater detection on these platforms. If this live-streamed abuse is undetected, it means it's uninvestigated. And it involves offenders, sex offenders from Western countries, primarily like US, Australia, UK, who then pay to watch the live-streamed abuse and exploitation of Filipino children. And they pay, what, as little as £15? Mm. Not just to watch, but often they even direct, instruct the local offenders here in the Philippines on how they will abuse the children. Many of the perpetrators or offenders here in the Philippines are biological parents, relatives, or family members. That makes reporting complicated because it's culturally unacceptable to tell on your friends, on your neighbors, on your family members.
That is absolutely crazy.
They do not see the seriousness or the impact of the crime on the survivors. What we're doing is we're trying to raise awareness that it's unacceptable for a child to be sexually abused and exploited.
The Philippine Internet Crimes Against Children Center is a global team fighting live-streamed abuse. Agents from around the world share intel on cases at home and abroad. Dominic's got me into their weekly meeting.
Have the confiscation of all the gadgets.
They identify the victim.
And is that an additional rescue
yes.
now?
Yes.
So what's the total of children rescued for that operation now? Because last we heard it was 27.
So it's for 28.
Fantastic.
Yes.
I will check with the teams back in the UK just to make sure that there isn't anything further.
Okay.
There were so many countries in there. You had Canada, Netherlands, UK, America, Australia, and listening to all of these different cases from all around the world and how they're all interconnected really makes you think about the survivors and how many of them there must actually be.
A dog on a rooftop, then birds in cages. James approaches the birds.
My dad always kept birds. He had budgies, parakeets, all sorts of different ones. So I always like seeing them whenever I'm out and about.
In a kitchen,
one brave survivor, Cassie, has agreed to tell me about what she went through at the hands of an abuser. At 12, she was trafficked to Manila, believing she was heading to school. Now 26, after being rescued by the police and the International Justice Mission, she volunteers at shelters and campaigns to protect other kids.
So we're gonna cook adobo.
Okay.
It's actually very basic and easy to cook. In a shelter, you have to learn how to cook. See, my first time cooking, I was crying because I didn't know how to.
When I say I don't cook, I mean I don't even know how to use this thing.
Okay, this plate.
This is actually very embarrassing.
That one.
A potato peeler.
It's high level potato peeling that. Do you want to tell me more about you and who you are?
I grew up in Surigao.
Yeah.
And 2.5 hours flight from Manila. Our life there was very hard. We're not financially stable, and I have to work at a rice store.
What age were you when you were doing that?
I was 12 years old.
12 years old?
Yeah.
Wow. And is it legal to work here at 12 years old?
I think it's normal in the Philippines.
It's normal?
In the province.
Okay, fair enough.
Since I really want to help my family, one day, a customer approached me. And then a few days later, he approached me again. And he told me if I could go with him in Manila to attend school. My mom was working as a housekeeper to his family, so my parents felt that they could trust him because of that connection. He sent me to school. He was very kind to me. Until one month, he took me into a small room with a webcam. Several Western men on the screen. He told me to say hi to his friends. It all continued that I have to undress myself. And I was very shocked. I was very scared. And my parents didn't know what's happening to me. He made an online profile of me and posted lots of pictures of me selling to the customers. I was very scared, confused. What's going on? Someone is watching me on the screen.
And how often would you have had to do this?
Every day after school. And if I don't do that, he's gonna hurt me physically. I thought naked in front of this old man on the screen is just as normal. Mm-hmm. And then it all continued that for almost 5 years, IJM actually rescued us. Mm-hmm. I asked the police, the social workers, what about my school? I was crying that time with the other young girls. And then after that, they told me, you are safe.
And
what happened to the trafficker after that?
We testified in court. It was very difficult for us. But with the support of IJM, we won. Great. And he's now life imprisonment.
Can you tell me a bit more about what it feels like now that you've got out of all that and you're a survivor?
I feel safe that he can no longer touch me or just get anytime he wants. I don't call myself survivor anymore. I actually call myself victorious.
I cannot begin to understand what Cassie has gone through, but she's moved on and is focused on helping others.
Fish in a woven basket. Then James is getting onto a yellow boat.
Hello.
He sits under a canopy. He laughs, then takes pictures as the water taxi sails.
Hi.
City buildings at night. Now it's daytime and James is on his laptop.
Back in the UK, Duncan Bartlett has been arrested for online sex crimes. Over 35 charges. The victims' ages are between 9 and 16. London cops searched his devices. They found info. It's helped officers here identify a local person who they suspect of producing live-streamed abuse of teenagers. They've got a warrant and are doing a raid tonight.
I'm Police Lieutenant Colonel Army Mulatto, the Chief of the Luzon Field Unit.
How are you feeling about the operation today?
We expect that we can now stop what is the wrongful doing against the minors.
Against the minors.
Yeah. It's not every day you go on a raid, so I'm just going to roll with it and see how it goes. But yeah, I have to say there's a little bit of apprehension around it because I just don't know what to expect.
Police need to seize tech and find evidence of the abuse of the three girls. They need it so they can arrest the suspect and stop the live streaming.
Army says, so again, good afternoon. This is our final briefing before we jump off to the place of our target. We implement the warrant to search and seize computer data. So we understand the situation that it's possible we need to rescue six victims.
So the ages
of the victims are 15 to 17. They are considered as minors. While waiting for the go signal, our undercover will continue engaging online.
It stood out to me there that the first time it was reported it was 2021, and then they had to basically let the perpetrator sort of fire on to build the evidence, which is really sad, but I guess it's a necessary evil to get to this point.
We set off to the location in a convoy of police cars, trying to stick together as we weave through Manila's mad traffic.
It's like a roller coaster.
Over a two-hour journey, the hustle of a buzzing city becomes a rural night.
Driving past waterlogged fields.
So once we get here, what's actually going to happen?
We implement the warrant to determine other evidence aside from the online engagement.
What evidence are you specifically looking for?
All the gadgets.
All the gadgets, including the USB, the external hard drive, the cell phones. That is very common, cell phones and laptops. Even the internet connection is included.
And how are you feeling now? It's obviously been a very long day for you.
We have the passion
to catch them, even though many nights we're not sleeping to prepare for this operation.
Yeah.
Army tells the convoy to pull over.
As of this time, we wait for the signal of our undercover.
Are we close to the house where we're parked at?
We're very close now.
Okay.
Because the house is in the alley.
It's a tense waiting game. The cops need to be in place and ready to go. But in a city area, there's always a risk they'll be spotted.
To actually be going into the place where it's happening is... really fucking scary, to be honest, so I just don't know what to expect.
We're on a stakeout. Undercover officers are waiting for the suspect to come home from their day job before breaking cover.
18 hours so far, and this could probably continue right through the night.
Down the alley.
22 hours in and we're on the move. Undercover officers believe the suspect is home. Dominic's here, this raid, based on British intel, could expose more UK offenders.
Do you think that we're going to be able to go in tonight?
I think so. We'll let them secure the scene. We'll make sure that everything's safe, that they recover the evidence that we want.
It's crazy just to think that we're way over here on the other side of the world and somebody from back in the UK has been paying to live stream this stuff.
Yeah, and it is great to have the opportunity to see that connect between an investigation in the UK that we can support the Filipino law enforcement is here in ultimately rescuing children.
Yeah.
Even with all the planning and experience, there's a problem.
She told us that the couple is not here, but the address is here. We should implement the warrant.
We should implement the warrant.
It appears as though the people that we're after aren't actually in at the moment.
Oh, no.
So there's a family member here who's trying to get hold of them, which obviously poses dangers in terms of loss of evidence, if they're aware that there's a load of police here. So we're just trying to work out exactly.
How could that have happened? I thought the intelligence was suggesting they were here.
Yes, it certainly was. They still want to follow through with the warrant. They still want to go and search the premises, because if we leave the premises now without searching it, then potentially, yeah. So even if the devices that the perpetrators have got on them aren't here, there might be other material that we can find.
This is just still worth getting in.
Absolutely.
The police are seizing the devices thought to belong to the local suspect and running on-site forensics for crucial evidence.
Although I don't think we got the full outcome that we wanted, which was the perpetrators being arrested here, the guys have managed to seize loads of devices. So it's not a complete win, but it's definitely a win.
The forensic downloads will be taken back to the station for analysis. They may identify new perpetrators in the UK.
London.
9 weeks later, Bartlett, whose arrest triggered the investigation and raid in the Philippines, is in court.
I'm here to see Duncan Bartlett get sentenced, who has already pleaded guilty to 35 cases of child abuse. So having followed Dominic and the Filipino police on the intelligence that came from this case, it's absolutely incredible to actually be here and see a British person brought to justice.
I witnessed Bartlett's sentencing and heard the horrific evidence against him. As a high-profile perpetrator, the UK media reported on his case. He was linked to 7 Filipino perpetrators of live-streamed abuse.
So he's pled guilty to 35 counts of this kind of abuse and got 8 years. He was offending since 2012, which is crazy because Cassie would have been in that age group that he wanted to view content off. And to think that this guy, Duncan, has actually been funding that and actually making that happen is absolutely horrific.
They call it a priority, yet social media keeps connecting cyber sex criminals to victims.
So I definitely think that the social media platforms need to do something to stop this at its source.
But with Zuckerberg brazenly keeping the focus on saluting free speech above all else.
The reality is that this is a trade-off. It means we're gonna catch less bad stuff.
Everyone everywhere has something to say.
Just be honest. Say, look, you know, Elon Musk is ahead of the game on this. He's right up Trump's backside and I can't afford to be too far behind him.
Let that bigotry banner wave.
All you fact-checking little b****s that took down my videos in the past, bye-bye.
Profit's more important than safety.
I contacted the platforms for a response and Meta said, we recently announced new teen accounts, a protected experience. We responded to Bban Kidron's concerns and took steps to promptly remove any violating accounts identified. We strongly disagree with Mr. Bejar's assertions. Discord works relentlessly to keep bad content off the platform and take immediate action when we see it. Snapchat is designed to make it difficult for predators to find and interact with young people and has extra safeguards in place to help prevent strangers from being able to connect with teens. Misogyny has long been prohibited on TikTok, and we proactively detect 93% of content we remove for breaking our rules. Dance, dance,
If you've been a victim of online abuse, including sextortion, you'll find details of help and support on the Victims of Crime support page at the Action Line pages of the BBC website.